Hello, welcome to the monthly session. I'm Mark Little. This is the time each month where we get together and I review some content. What happens during the month is you all send in questions, things you're struggling with, or issues that have just crossed your mind that you need to improve or accelerate, some obstacle that you're dealing with in your business. And what I do is I hand select from the questions that come in a handful that I think are the most relevant to everyone. And so I tend to go through them in this session, but that doesn't mean that if while we're going through this today, you have some questions that you can't ask, you should. As a matter of fact, I've been told over the years that this monthly session is actually the most valuable part of our program because it's where you have an opportunity to get live coaching. So if you need to walk through some issue with me, now's your chance. If you're struggling with anything, get your thoughts together and either raise your hand and we'll go live when I get to a breaking point, or just type in your question. I'll do my best to keep up with them before we finish up today. So the questions that came in this month that I thought were the most relevant are questions that we have never really talked about before. The first one had to do with charging for meeting with potential clients. And then in the course of interacting with one of you this last month, it occurred to me that that it might help you to share exactly how I deal with potential clients, just part of my client acquisition process. The question came up about, what is it that I talk about with potential clients that really helps them understand what I do and what makes me better than everyone else who does what I do. So we'll go over that today. All right, first things first. I've heard that you charge potential clients for your first meeting with them. In this program, you call that the initial client interview. Yes, I do. Is it true that you charge for this meeting? How much do you charge and why? I think this is really an important question because in my experience, including my own, most financial advisors do not charge when they first sit down with a potential client. And the reason I say my own experience is because up until the year 2000, I didn't charge for this initial client interview with a potential client. The reasons are pretty obvious. I think for most advisors, if we're being very honest, the reason that we don't charge is because we're concerned that if we did charge, we'd meet with fewer people. In other words, it would kind of reduce the number of people that we meet with if it was a requirement that we charged for that meeting. What's interesting is I found the opposite to be true. And I'll go through the mental process that I went through in coming to my decision to charge for that initial meeting, but I'll jump to the end and tell you this, that once I began charging, I started conducting more initial client interviews. So it had the opposite effect that I feared. I was concerned that I would meet with fewer potential clients. Turns out I met with more potential clients after I started charging for the initial client interview. And I'll let you decide why that is. But let me just kind of go through. Let's start with a definition. What is the initial client interview? Well, as I mentioned, this is the very first time you sit down to talk business with a potential client. Now, I don't want you to confuse this with my client acquisition method, because those of you that have been in the program for a few months, you've heard me talk about this. When I am interacting with people for the purpose of client acquisition, I don't talk business with them. When I sit down with someone, just a friend or a colleague or an associate, I sit down for the purpose of getting to know them as a person. In other words, I do not sit down when I'm sitting down with someone, it's just to sit down as a friend. So when I've got a new friend, or if I've got somebody that I've known for years, a lifelong friend, even when I call them up and suggest we get together, I just simply say, let's get together and catch up. It's nothing about business, nothing about any, I don't go in with any ulterior business motive whatsoever. But then what does happen is, over the course of developing a relationship with someone, if they understand what you do, if somehow, some way you have orchestrated it so that they understand what you do and they know what makes you better than others at what you do. And we're going to talk about that today, how that happens. But the bottom line is, assuming they know what you do, over time, they will, in large numbers, want to sit down and talk business with you. Okay, so that's what I'm talking about. You've met with someone on a personal basis. You're meeting with them just to develop a deepened relationship with them. So you're talking about personal stuff. And then as long as they know what you do and the and what makes you better, then at some point they'll say they might want to sit down and talk business with you about one of their financial issues. So that first time that I sit down and talk business with them, that's what I'm calling the initial client interview. Okay. So let me tell you some of the requirements that that occurred to me after I sat down and made the decision to charge for this initial client interview. First thing I did was I established some ground rules for things that need to be the case for you to charge. All right. So I came up with something that I have come to be known as the 15 essential elements of an effective initial client interview. So I've got a list of 15 bullet points of things that need to be the case if you're going to charge. But I wanted to share three of them, because in my opinion, if you have these three of the 15 essential elements of an effective first appointment with a potential client, then you should be charging for that time. So what are the three of the 15 essential elements that really matter most? First of all, when you sit down with someone for the very first time to talk business, is it just a typical business meeting where you're just going through, a checklist of questions, or is it a compelling experience? Okay. My methodology involves a compelling experience. I'll talk more about that in a minute, but it was in the year 1999 that I moved from doing my, what I call client onboarding, but this whole initial client interview process, I used to do this using a 3-meeting process. It was grueling. It was not an experience for them. It was tedious, but it was very useful for me, and it was effective. In other words, if I could spend 3 meetings, each of the meetings being somewhere between 90 minutes and 2 hours. So we're talking about a 5 or 6 hour process over 3 meetings, where I would ask a bunch of kind of a deep dive into fact finder type questions about their financial situation. I would go through this with potential clients. And by the end of the third meeting, I had a very high percentage of those people ultimately become clients. So yes, it was effective, but no, it was not a compelling experience. It was a tedious, laborious, fact-finding series of questions, and definitely not an experience for them. Not a good one. Now, that changed in the year 2000. What I adopted in the year 2000 was Bill Bachrach's financial roadmap. So when I went from my 3-meeting laborious fact-finding process to beginning to use Bill Bachrach's financial roadmap, What happened was I streamlined the whole process. Bill showed me how to do this, that instead of meeting three times for like 5 or 6 hours, I could in one meeting, a single meeting, have them bring in all their documents and deliver a compelling experience for them. And there's no question. I mean, I have now done thousands of these financial roadmap interviews with individuals as the initial client interview. And it's rare that someone does not have a compelling experience as a result of implementing the financial roadmap experience the way Bill Bachrach teaches it. So I always refer people back to Bill Bachrach for learning the financial roadmap. It is a compelling experience, but I will warn you what Bill warned me. When you are scheduling that initial client interview, you cannot and should not attempt to describe the experience. As Bill is so fond of saying, you cannot describe an experience. You have to experience it. So you have to be very, very careful. If your initial client interview is a compelling experience, you need to establish ways of scheduling that meeting without peeking into the experience or sharing the experience or trying to describe the experience. Okay. So question number one is your initial client interview a compelling experience versus just some sort of a laborious process? All right. If the answer is yes, you're using the financial roadmap, or your initial client interview is a compelling experience for them, then you should be charging. The second thing is, does your initial client interview provide value to them, whether or not you end up working together? So that was the one thing that changed was, not only was the financial roadmap that Bill Bachrach has created, not only was it a compelling experience, is it a compelling experience, but it also is highly valuable. In other words, individuals walk away from that meeting with work product that they can use and is extraordinarily useful to them. In the case of the financial roadmap, they have their financial roadmap in hand. They now have a tool that they can use to improve their financial life as a product or work product of the initial client interview. So number one, is it a compelling experience? Number two, does it provide value for the potential client, whether or not you end up working together? And then third, what I think is the third essential element that matters most is, do both spouses find the meeting extraordinarily relevant? All right. So not every person that is a potential ideal client of yours is married. No, of course not. Some are single. But I will say most of my potential ideal clients are married and were married over the years. So obvious exceptions are successful single people. So we're not counting them out. All I'm doing is describing the average or the common ideal client, in that it's not an individual, it's a couple. And so my recommendation, and certainly if you're working with Bill Bachrach with the financial roadmap, but whatever your initial client interview process is, I recommend you do not proceed with the initial client interview without establishing the ground rule up front that both spouses need to be present. So why is it that sometimes, and I would say frequently, one of the two spouses wants to sit down and talk with you, but not with the other one present? I mean, are they trying to hide something from their spouse? Typically not. The situation is that in many, many marriages, there's in essence a division of labor. And one of the two spouses often is the one that is kind of more in charge of the money stuff. And then also not infrequently, the spouse that is not involved as quite as much in the money side of the family, turns out they don't really like the money side. Either it's boring or it's so complicated, they don't really understand how things are structured or something. But all I can say is this, it's very frequent that one of the two spouses just really doesn't love this money stuff, and they will make an attempt to meet with you alone. In other words, I'm the one that handles the money. Oh, my spouse doesn't care about this stuff. As a matter of fact, we have an agreement. I'm the one that handles all this. So my spouse doesn't even want to be in that meeting. And they'll take a pass at you trying to confirm this initial meeting without their spouse. And I'm telling you, don't do it. Now, why would a financial advisor agree to just meet with one instead of both spouses? I'm going to go out on a limb here. I don't know for sure. This is one of these things that I do not have data on, but I have known financial advisors for 40 years, and I will speculate that if a financial advisor is willing to meet with one spouse rather than both, it's because one of two things. Either they are afraid that if they say no, they'll have less initial client interviews. In other words, if they don't agree, they think that the potential client's going to walk. In other words, oh, well, if you have to meet with both of us, just forget about it. It's either that or that, honestly, you've tried it with both spouses and it turns out that they were right using your initial client interview method, that it's only valuable to the spouse that's more involved with the money. So that, you know, okay, sure, if you demand that both show up, then they both show up. But what you've noticed is the one that's not involved in the money kind of sits there silently for an hour and isn't particularly involved, doesn't share any information. They're just quiet. And you're concerned that there's a high probability that they leave the meeting thinking, why was I here? Why was it important for me to be in this meeting? I wasn't asked anything. I didn't contribute anything. I didn't say anything relevant to this meeting. Why was I asked to attend this meeting? So I will go out on a limb and say, and you just ask yourself this, can you honestly say that when both spouses leave your initial client interview, that they're both saying to themselves, wow, what a meeting. I am so glad I didn't miss this meeting. I was important to this agenda. In other words, this agenda could not have gone forward in the way that it did without my input. And I'm saying, do both spouses agree that that's the case? Because if not, then, you know, you need to find some other method, because you need them both there. But the rule of thumb is, if you're going to have them both there, you have to make the meeting extraordinarily relevant to each of them. And if you can't, then I don't know. I don't know what to tell you, because in my opinion, marriage is a team effort. And it's just setting off your entire relationship with this couple off on the wrong note entirely if you don't have the initial client interview with both of them present. Well, thankfully, I discovered that with, at least with Bill Bachrach's financial roadmap experience, it is relevant to both spouses. And not only relevant, it's that both spouses leave my initial client interviews thinking, wow, that was a great meeting. I am so glad I did not miss this meeting. Both spouses walk away knowing that their contribution was critical. All right. So is it a compelling experience? Does your initial client interview provide value, whether or not you end up working with these people or not? And third, is your content of the initial client interview so compelling to both spouses that each of them walk away thinking, yo, this was very extraordinarily relevant to me, meaning each of them. Okay, so I'm going to say, and if you're interested in the other, you know, 12 of the essential elements of an effective initial client interview, submit it as a question. I've gone through it before in past months. I can't remember the last time we went through those, but I'm happy to go through them with you again. But those are the three. If you can say yes to these three things, then you should be charging for your initial client interview. So why did I ultimately make the decision to charge? Well, for me, the reason I started charging was because before I started charging, I did not like the question that many potential clients asked, which is, what's in it for you? So somebody would ask me, okay, Mark, yeah, I'd love to sit down and talk business with you. What do you charge for that? And I would say, nothing. I don't charge for that. And this was in the old days. And then they would say, really? You don't charge anything. So then why are you doing this? What's in this for you? And I had a response to that. And of course, when I first started working with Bill Bachrach, this is back in the year 2000, there were, I think, 23 financial advisors in my initial high-end coaching program with Bill Bachrach. It was called Trusted Advisor Coach Program. So I asked all the others. There were more than 20 advisors in my class of 2000. And so I asked them, what do you say when somebody says, why are you doing this for free, or what's in it for you? Some of them had a little bit better response than what I was saying, because I was pretty simple. I just said, I just don't charge for my initial client interview. I didn't go get much into it. I just said, it's the way it is. I don't charge for that. And so, but it left hanging this potential that maybe there's an ulterior motive. So what types of people don't charge for the initial client interview? Well, it's usually salespeople. Okay. So I just felt like before, I don't charge for my meeting, it implied that what I was providing is not valuable, and, or I'm a salesperson. Okay. I just thought, no matter what I say and no matter how skillfully I say it, it's always going to seem to them like, if you don't charge, it must not be that valuable. Or number two, you're a salesperson. And I didn't like either one of those options. So after I began charging, I loved the answer to that question. Somebody would say, what do you charge for your first meeting with someone? And I say, well, it's a process. It starts with me working with you on the phone to schedule the appointment. I like to meet with both spouses so we can get this on the schedule for both of you. So call in advance. The meeting itself is about an hour in length. And there's a breakthrough of clarity. And then I follow up with a phone call after, just to make sure that you're crystal clear what your precise next step's going to be. So that whole process is $500. So I have charged $500 since the year 2000. It was a bigger number because inflation has eroded $500. But I think, wouldn't you agree that if you charged $500 for your initial client interview, or if you'll take my advice and contact Bill Bachrach and utilize the financial roadmap as your initial client interview, wouldn't you agree that $500 still gets people's attention, even though it's 23 years later? I have found it's a good number. I've never felt the need to change it. And the final thing that I will say on this, so now you're thinking, wow, he charges $500 and he had more initial client interviews after he charged. Yes, I have always had more financial roadmaps since I began charging, but I will tell you this, that when I established that price for that meeting, I did make a decision that I would be willing under two situations to waive that fee. And I frequently will waive that $500 fee if it's a referral from an existing client. I'll offer to waive the fee. Or when I'm just meeting with people to catch up with them, if they share a significant financial issue and they start hinting around that they would like to maybe sit down and talk business, I will tell them the price and how the process works. But I'll say, you know, we're friends. I mean, we are close friends. And, you know, if it would help, I'd be happy to waive my fee if that would help. Is that something that you'd like to do? And look, it's 50-50. And many of you out there would say, why did you waive the fee? And even Bill Bachrach has asked me this over the years. Why would you ever waive the fee for a friend? It sounds unprofessional. The only thing I can tell you is, I don't know. When I started doing it, I was enough nervous about charging $500 that I just said, look, if they're friends or if they are clients, I'm willing to waive the fee. The interesting thing is that, especially in the case of friends, either they are wanting to sit down and talk business or they are sharing with me the plight of someone they know, someone that they know or love or care about, that they are going through a significant financial issue. And they'll often ask me, like, I know somebody going through this situation. Is that something that you deal with? And I would say, yeah, we have a process for that, whatever it is, usually. And then I would tell them the process and the price for the meeting, but I would say, you know, since we're friends, if it would help, I'd be willing to waive the fee. And, you'd be surprised how many times they follow up by saying, no problem. Send them an invoice. It's fine. I think it's good for them to pay for this and, or themselves. I will tell you, honestly, if it's them that's having the issue that they want to talk with me about, they tend to say thank you for waiving the fee. But if it's somebody else, I don't keep stats on this, but it's, let's call it 50. It's less than 50-50. I would say maybe 30-40% of the time they would say, no, go ahead and charge them. It'd be good for them to pay for this. It's not quite 50%, but it's a significant number who actually tell you to go ahead and charge $500 anyway, even when you've offered to waive the fee. So I hope that helps. I encourage you, if you can say yes to those three essential elements of the initial client interview, I would go further and say you should be charging because it's valuable and a compelling experience, relevant for both spouses. There's really not a good case to be made for why you would waive the fee. It cheapens what you do. I just never have thought it's professional to do work for free. And that's the bottom line on that. Okay. Next question. And we're going to go through this. Came up. We had a financial advisor who is implementing my client acquisition methodology, which is just simply, you know, I'm an introvert. I have always had call reluctance. So the thing that was certain when I first got into this business, I went to work for a Wall Street-based firm. First thing they did was try to get me to cold call, like just jump on the phone and start calling strangers. And we had to do it. So I did it because I had to, and I didn't want to get fired, but I was not good at it. It was horrible. Like if you listen to the recordings of those early calls, it's dreadful. But the main thing is stressed me out. I never got good at it. I hated it. I was considering leaving the business if that's the way it was going to be. So thankfully, don't ask me how I came up with this, but I ultimately figured out how to acquire, not only just acquire a few clients, not using any sales tactics, not using any closing techniques, not using any appointment setting techniques, but just literally meeting with people on a personal basis with no ulterior business motives and in essence, getting to know people personally, like deepen the personal relationship. But then eventually many, if not most, want to sit down and talk business with me. Well, this is the part where many advisors say, well, how do you do that? How is it that you do that? And I say, it's because there is something called the reciprocal moment that occurs every time you sit down and have a conversation with someone. And I will go through the reciprocal moment in a minute. Well, let's go through it now. So I'm going to tell this to you, and you're going to immediately think, oh yeah, I know what he's talking about. Why have I never thought of this before? Don't worry about it. Just follow what I'm saying. So you're sitting down, you meet with someone just to catch up with a friend, and you're over coffee, let's say, or you grab lunch together and you're catching up the way you normally would with a friend. And because I'm an introvert, I let them talk. I found out when I was 11 years old that as an introvert, the best way to be perceived as a dazzling conversationalist is just to ask people a bunch of open-ended questions to the point where they are doing all the talking. So I'd say, what's happened with you since the last time we met? Anything interesting? And they'll start talking. Most people will start talking. And they're going on and on and on and on and on. They're talking about something that interesting that happened to them. And every time they pause in their story, I'll say, really? So what happened then? Or that's fascinating. And so what did you do? Or I would just continue asking open-ended questions so that they're doing all the talking. Have you noticed that in that situation, or can you imagine in that situation how after it's different for every person, but let's say after 4, 5, 6 minutes, they say something like this. They say, Mark, I've been doing all the talking. So tell me what's going on in your life? In other words, I call this the reciprocal moment. This is the moment where they snap to the notion that they've been doing all the talking. It's a subliminal thing. Most people, unless they are narcissists, which narcissists do exist, but they're not that common, that are so excessively narcissistic that they don't care what's going on in your life. No. Most people will snap to the fact that they're doing all the talking. And at some point they'll say, enough about me. What's happening with you? What's going on in your life? That's the reciprocal moment. So what I'm saying is, with the reciprocal moment, this is called a TRF meeting. I don't want to spend time in this session explaining what TRF meeting is. Let's just say it's shorthand for any time you sit down on a personal basis with someone just to catch up with them personally. In other words, not a business meeting, a personal meeting. So in our vernacular, in my programs, we call just sitting down with a friend, whether you're grabbing coffee or grabbing lunch or having them over for dinner, any meeting where you're interacting with someone on personal business, we call that a TRF meeting. So what I'm saying is that the first time you ever meet with someone, like, and or if this is the first time, let's say you have a lifelong friend, I'm saying the first time you meet with them with someone after you've implemented this process. In other words, they have never heard any of the things that you're going to develop around this reciprocal moment. All right. So what do I do? The reciprocal moment is my response when they say, enough about me, what's happening with you? I'm going to go through the structure of it in just a minute, but it's a 1.5 to 2 minute story, just responding to the question, what's happening with you, Mark? Okay. So I come prepared. And the first meeting, TRF meeting number one, the first time I sit down with someone, they'll say, so Mark, what's happening in your world? And I'll say, you know, have I ever told you what I do for a living? Or after I have done TRF meeting number one and explained what I do in a concise, conversational, compelling manner that doesn't exceed 1.5 to 2.5 minutes, the very first TRF meeting with someone, I call that TRF meeting number one, I explain what I do. Now, I know with some of these programs out there, it's not conventional wisdom to ever tell them what you do. It's some people tell you, well, focus on them and just ask them about their goals and all that. All I can say is none of that training existed 23 years ago when I went through this. It just wasn't being taught by anyone. And so I was out with no support. I had to come up with something. So whether it's right or wrong, long before any of these programs where they're telling you, don't tell them what you do, none of that existed. I had to do something. So I made a command decision way back then, quarter of a century ago, almost, that in the first time I sit down with someone, I'm gonna explain what I do in a way that not only explains what I do, but it's radically different from others who do what I do. And it needs to demonstrate that I am way above the quality of anybody else who does what I do. In other words, here's what I do. It's radically different. So you would not, after hearing what me say what I do, you would not call me a financial advisor, particularly, because it's just so different. Really? You do that? It's radically different. And it provides so much value to them, you know, that it's compelling. Like they want to sit down and meet with you. So that's TRF meeting number one. And I'm not going to cover that today. We've covered that in the past. If you're curious how I describe what I do in responsible to the reciprocal moment, I'm happy to go over TRF meeting number one with you. But that was not the question. The question was, I've heard that you tell potential clients stories about clients in a way that they understand what makes you better than the average financial advisor. And that's what we're going to talk about today. And that starts with TRF meeting number two. So TRF meeting number one, I just say, hey, I don't think I've ever told you what I do for a living, have I? And they say, no, you haven't. And so I go through TRF meeting number one, but it's all in response to the reciprocal moment where they stop talking. They say, what's happening with you? And this is probably the first time in the meeting where they totally go quiet. They shut down. They're all ears. And they stop doing what most people, all of us do in a conversation like this routinely. You know, as they're talking, normally I'm already thinking ahead to what I'm going to say next. Okay. Well, at the reciprocal moment, when they say, oh, I've been doing all the talking, Mark, tell me what on earth has been happening with you since the last time we met. So it's, they go quiet. They turn off their brain. They are all ears. They're listening. They are waiting patiently for you to speak. And they are, for the first time in the meeting, they're listening. Okay. That's the reciprocal moment. So what do you do with one of these vignettes? What is a reciprocal moment vignette starting with TRF meeting number two? What's the structure of it? Well, I've already said it's a minute and a half to 2 minutes, so it's short. But the structure of the vignette is when you're telling a story, a client story, you start with a transition in. Now, I'll go into this a little bit more in a minute, but this changes every time. This is where, you know, they don't always ask you, you know, what's going on with you. Sometimes they say, Mark, how's the family? How's your daughter? Well, that's not a very good transition into a business story. So I will use the transition in to react to whatever they just asked of me in the reciprocal moment, but to transform it into what's coming next, which is a vignette, a story about a client. Okay. So I will use the transition in to change up what I say, to transition to the fact that the very next thing I'm going to be talking about is a client story. Then the second piece of the reciprocal moment vignette is the scripted story. So then I tell the client story and I use something called the hero's journey. But the main thing you need to know is in my story, I'm not the hero. The client's the hero. Okay. So I tell a story that's short where the client ends up being the hero in the end. And instead of once upon a time, my story always starts with a couple came in to see me. Okay. Now, in your case, if you're going to use something like the vignette that I'm going to share today, you can feel free to use my vignettes that I'm going to share. But you should be honest about it. You should not say a couple came in to see me. If you're telling a story of some other financial advisor, you can say it effectively and in a way that's not weird, like you're telling someone else's story. You just don't say it happened to you. You just say, well, let me give you an example of the kind of situations that I'm dealing with. Okay, so there's this couple. And so instead of saying a couple came in to see me, you say, well, there's this couple. And then you start telling the story. All right. So maybe they assume that they did come in and see you, but you've been honest. You've said, this is just a situation that, let me give you an example of the types of situations I commonly come across. So transition in, script, which changes, scripted story. You tell the story using the hero's journey. Then at the end of the story, you transition out. Now, again, this can be different and it should be different. So the transition in and the transition out are always a little bit different, mainly because you're meeting with a friend. You know, how often do you meet with friends? 4 or 5 times a year? Depends on how good of friends you are, right? So some people you meet with twice a year. I mean, some friends, if I'm being honest, I just meet once a year with them. A lot of friends I meet with 3 times a year. Some friends, and they have to be pretty good friends, I meet with quarterly. You know, we meet 4 times a year. Anything more than that, they better be like fascinating. Like anything more frequently than that, it's got to be a really, really good friend. But the point is, since you're meeting with someone often several times every year, I like to change up the transition in and transition out so that I'm not being scripted. In other words, it is natural because the story, you know, I'm changing a little bit of my way I deal with people when I get to the reciprocal moment. But the thing that's changing is the transition in and the transition out. The purpose of the transition out is, in essence, to allow you to explain how you're the only game in town, or to explain how valuable you are. But I normally do it in kind of a self-appreciation way, in that I say something like this, you know, to transition out, I'll tell the story and then I'll say, you have no idea how satisfying it is to help people like this. And I love being the only person in town helping people have breakthroughs like this. So part of my process is I like for them to hear that I am the only person in town who does what I do. So I would say, if you're the only game in town, you should say that out loud. That will increase the probability that people will want to sit down and talk business with you. But if you're concerned that maybe you're not radically different enough from other financial advisors, that you're not sure if you can honestly say that you are the only advisor in town who does what you do, well, then submit that as a question to me, because we need to stop that and fix that. We need to fix that immediately. You need to be the only game in town. What you do, or the way that you do it, should be not just a little bit different from other financial advisors. The key is it needs to be radically differentiated from other financial advisors, so that when somebody understands what you do, they understand clearly that you are head and shoulders above everyone else. Okay. So the transition out is where you slip that in, where you're the only game in town and you have no idea how satisfying it is to be the only person in town who does what you're describing that you do. And then the fourth and final step in these 1.5 to 2.5 minute vignettes is that you always conclude with a question. You never just tell the end of the story. You always conclude with a question that encourages engagement. So it's normally something around the idea of, have you ever known someone who's been in this situation, and you explain the specific situation that's being described in this scripted story that you just shared with them, but always, always, always conclude with a question about the scripted story that you just completed. Okay. So that's the format. let me just go through. So starting at TRF. So again, TRF meeting number one, I just explain what I do. But starting in TRF meeting number two, so if it's a friend that you're meeting with, and this is, let's say you meet with them quarterly, then I met with them 3 months ago. They now know what I do, and they know what makes me radically different from everybody else who does what I do. Now, starting in TRF meeting number two and three and four and five and six and seven and eight, nine, 10, every other subsequent TRF meeting, when you get to the reciprocal moment, you're going to tell a story. I call this a vignette. All right. And you're just, again, so Mark, I've been doing all the talking. What's happening with you? And I do a transition. And I don't think I've told you what I do for a living, have I? And then you go right into the story. Okay. I'm going to just go through this with you as though my meeting with you right now is the second time we've sat down to catch up on personal things. At some point in the meeting, we're grabbing coffee. At some point, you know, you're telling me, so Mark, what's happening with you? I will say, let me just go through this, and you can time me if you want. Okay. So last time I told you what I do, right? So you know, I sit down and help people struggling with a significant financial issue, right? Well, okay. So a couple schedules time, what have I been doing? I've been busy at work. A couple schedules time to discuss many significant financial issues that were keeping them up at night. And when they came in, their tension was obvious. They walked into the office a bundle of nerves. It was just blatant. But as they spoke to me, they started to warm up and relax. And one by one, they meticulously worked through each of their financial issues. Mission accomplished. By the end of the hour, they both were noticeably relaxed. They were smiling, worry-free as they stood up to leave. And we were at the door chatting on the way out, and she paused in the doorway and said, you know, before this meeting, I literally could not sleep through the night. I would just lay there in bed worrying about all of this stuff, but I'm going to sleep like a baby tonight and every night after that. And she was so thankful to get everything out onto the table. Well, he was right behind her. So when he passed me by, he said, he started tearing up, and then he ultimately started crying. I mean, imagine the situation, you know, they're leaving, she's walking through the door, and now he's crying. And he just said, well, he had been worried before they came in as well, but it turns out what he was worried about was her. that why he scheduled this meeting to begin with is it was mostly out of concern for her. And with her now having such confidence and calm about their financial future, well, it was an emotional relief for him. So for me, it is so satisfying to be able to help people make a substantial breakthrough like that. You know, after struggling so much with their issues, to make that kind of an impact. This couple came in tense and frustrated about their finances, and they left with calm confidence that everything's going to be okay. Have you ever known anyone that was so worried about their financial disarray that they just permanently put everything on the back burner, just avoidance of the issue? Now, how did that sound? Did it sound natural? They said, Mark, enough. I've been doing all the talking. Tell me what's happening with you. I transition it over to business. I tell a client story. I end with this question. Have you ever known anybody so worried about their financial disarray that they just put it permanently on the back burner? Can you see how concluding with a question will get, it'll drive some sort of a response? So now you're stopping talking because you asked a question, they're going to respond. So that's how this works. Notice how I did my transition in. I told my little scripted story. I transitioned out. Here's what I get out of this process with the client. And, you know, I'm trying to convey this is what makes me different and better than others. And I always conclude with a question. Now, I will tell you the reason I'm going through the structure again is I coach advisors one-on-one with this. And I have found that for whatever reason, advisors often need one-on-one coaching. And what does it often end up being? Well, it breaks all these rules. The transition in is weird, or it just seems abrupt where you just start telling a client story. The scripted story is too long often. The transition out doesn't really convey much about your passion about what you do or what makes you different than other advisors. And often, for whatever reason, financial advisors forget to conclude with a question. So in short, with almost every financial advisor I have worked with one-on-one, they break one or more of these four rules. We call it the four-step process. So this is the reciprocal moment four-step process. So let's go on to TRF meeting number three. I'm going to give you one more example and then we will be done for the day. So again, they say, oh, because remember, I'm letting them do all the talking. So they say, oh, well, huh, I haven't heard anything about you, Mark. So you're being quiet. So what's happened with you since the last time we spoke? Okay. Well, I've been very, very busy with work. You know, I sit down with people who are struggling with a significant financial issue, right? We talked about that, didn't we? And they say, yes. Okay, well, let's see. Here's one. Client couple is all stressed out because her father had fallen ill and she had to move out to another state to go care for him. And this separated her from her husband for more than a year. So this obviously caused stress in the marriage. And although he was supportive of his wife's decision to go care for her ill father, of course, nevertheless, it was stressful. He was an executive with a large nationally known company. And here she was going out of state to go care for her dad on a regular basis. So on one of his trips to go visit her, they decided that they thought they would schedule a meeting with me. And they understood that it was just a one-hour meeting, but even though they were doubtful that a one-hour session could resolve much, nevertheless, they came in. So they sat down. I asked them both a bunch of questions designed to get them focused on the big picture of their situation. And so they shared a lot of things that they'd never said out loud before, or if they had, they shared things that they just had not shared with each other in many, many years. Okay. And so that conversation really did open things up, and the real issues started to quickly emerge, got everything out onto the table. And it turns out that he was actually willing to stop working so that they could be back together again. But the big issue was, he didn't know if they could make it work financially if he were to stop working. So it took a more than one meeting, but we did some quick math, and it turned out that they did have enough money to allow them to still achieve all their financial objectives that they had established for themselves, and still allow him to stop working so they could be together. They were really surprised that it was financially feasible to do that. So mission accomplished. That decision was a huge, huge breakthrough for them. It resolved the biggest source of stress in their lives, which is that they were separated much of the time. So now they could live together again, and Need I say they lived happily ever after? So, you know, this couple walked in feeling they had no options to their current dilemma. Yet they walked out an hour later with two problems more or less resolved. Because I was assuring them we would work through the math and figure out a way to make this work. And there it is, resolved. It's always amazing to me how powerful this process is. And so have you ever known a couple that's just so stressed out about some significant financial issue, they just don't know which direction to go? And I just shut up. I don't care if I have to be quiet for 5 minutes. I'm not opening my mouth after I ask that question. And it'll seem a little uncomfortable to you at first, but what are they doing if they're quiet after you ask the question? They're thinking, they're going through the hard drive. They're trying to, have I ever known someone like this? And even if they don't, and I would say even most of the time, maybe they can't think of anyone that fits this situation. I can't tell you how often people say, you know, I don't know that, but I do know someone who's going through this. And so whatever comes to their mind first is somebody who's struggling with some sort of a significant financial issue. It could be, it could be a divorce. It could be, you know, they're selling their business, or it could be that they're retiring from their company, or it could be that their credit cards were stolen and identity theft. It's whatever the significant financial issue is that's keeping them up at night. You know, this is their opportunity to think, who do I know? It's either me or someone that I care about. And when you ask the question, have you ever known someone like this question right here, that they might not know somebody in that situation, but they will at some point open up if they think of anyone. Now, picture this. In TRF meeting number one, in a minute and a half to 2.5 minutes, you tell them what you do, what you do and what makes you different. In TRF meeting number two, which is this, every TRF meeting number two, I tell this exact same vignette every time. So I tell this little story with a transition in, a scripted story, transition out, conclude with a question. Well, this is the second time I've met with them on a personal basis, so maybe they can't think of anyone. That's fine. They'll tell you, say, well, I can't think of anybody like that. Okay, fine. And then just stay quiet and they'll pick up the slack in the conversation and it'll go on just whatever you talk about with friends. So I'm just saying at the reciprocal moment, just come prepared with a minute and a half to 2.5 minute, okay, commercial. It's not a sales tactic. It's a story. The human mind is wired to receive stories. All right. So you come up with a story that is compelling and involves some sort of a breakthrough of clarity. And I'm saying, here's how you do that. You come up with, you know, you sit down and you make a list. And that's my call to action for you after today. I want you to sit down. I want you to think back on every client that you've ever served. And I want you to make a list of all the past clients in your life having a breakthrough of clarity as a result of working with you. Okay. So right now, write down two or three of them immediately. So I have vignettes prepared for every future meeting with a friend. So if I've known someone 10 years and I meet with them 4 times a year, quarterly, and then there's 40 vignettes. And all I can say is start with 10. You should have vignettes for the first 10 TRF meetings so that whenever they say, so what's going on with you? You can respond with a client story that's compelling. But the key is it's got to be a story involving a breakthrough of clarity. Okay. So, and it doesn't have to be a breakthrough of clarity in the initial client interview. If, like I just told the story, if it was a breakthrough of clarity over time, what I want you to do is jot down the names of clients where there was a breakthrough of clarity, even if it was after working with you for 5 years. Just make a list of clients who had a breakthrough of clarity. Now, craft each one loosely using the hero's journey. What is that? If you Google Joseph Campbell, the hero's journey, you will understand the hero's journey and you'll recognize it immediately. I would actually Google the hero's journey, Joseph Campbell, and then go to images because you'll see a little graphs of how these stories go. But it's going to look familiar to you because most of the best movies in the past have used Joseph Campbell's hero's journey, and you'll recognize it immediately. It doesn't matter if it's Star Wars or The Matrix, you know, it follows this same hero's journey. And remember, the client is the hero. So it starts off with, you know, an unassuming, just normal, regular person living their life. All of a sudden, something happens. There's a significant financial issue. Then there's all these trials and tribulations. And there's a breakthrough of clarity. And then they live happily ever after. Okay. So think about this. You know, every adventure movie that you thought was worth anything followed Joseph Campbell's hero's journey. And so you're just compressing that structure into a 1.5 to 2.5 minute story. So it's got to be short, following the hero's journey. And if you'll follow that, those three, you know, make a list of these clients, craft them using this hero's journey, make sure they're not ever over 2.5 minutes, the shorter, the better, then that's what you come prepared with. And I recommend that you record these meetings. So I realize you're meeting with friends and maybe it seems a little weird and awkward, but my methodology is I would record these meetings because that's how you improve. And I would make it a point, and this is my advice to you, schedule at least twice a week something that I call wind sprints. So what are wind sprints? Well, it's a 20 minutes of just practicing one of the vignettes over and over and over. You'd be shocked how many times you could go through, let's say, that TRF meeting number 2 or TRF meeting number 3. Just look at your schedule over the next 7 days. What do you seem to have the most of? Okay, TRF meeting, I have a lot of TRF meeting number 3s with people. Okay, so I'll practice today and today's wind sprints. For 20 minutes, I'm just going to practice TRF meeting number 3. And I'm going to schedule 20 minutes 2 times per week. So if you record the meetings, listen to the recordings, and then you conduct wind sprints twice a week to practice what again should be 10 TRF meeting vignettes, 10 reciprocal moment vignettes, then if you practice twice a week and you're recording those meetings, you're going to master this. You're going to be so natural with this reciprocal moment that it's just going to seem like a compelling, fun story to their ear, and it never gets old. So if every time you meet, they get used to hearing a story of how you've added value to a client's life, then you know, nobody's going to get old. So this is how I went from being an introvert with call reluctance to just meeting with people on a personal basis, deepening a relationship. But in every single time we met for 1.5 to 2.5 minutes, they got to hear what I do, what makes me better than others who do what I do. So what is that doing? The term is lip loading. You are training them what to say later when you're not around them and some friend of theirs brings up a significant financial issue and asks them, so what would you do? Well, they'd say, well, you're crazy if you don't call Mark Little. This is how you use this reciprocal moment 4-step process to increase referrals. And so that's it in a nutshell. So transition in, I would say, get used to the fact that they don't always say, so what's going on with you, Mark? They'll say, oh, like if they know me through sports, like I used to go to the San Diego Padres baseball game. I had season tickets. So friends would meet with me and they'd say, oh, I've been doing all the talking. So what's been going on with you, Mark? You've been to any Padres games lately? Well, okay. If I go straight into a client vignette, that's a little awkward and abrupt. So I will utilize the transition in to say, yeah, Padres are on fire this year, which is seldom true. But but anyway, I'll say, yeah, Padres are great. The games are great. But I tell you, I've just been mostly focused on business. And yeah, let's see. And then I would go into the scripted story. I'd say a couple, and then I would just tell the story. All right. And then transition out. You have no idea how satisfying it is to be the only person in town who helps people struggling with a significant financial issue. Have you ever known anybody who's, and then you conclude with a question. Get it? Let's see. Is there a question? We have three questions. Is the first meeting considered a TRF meeting? Yeah. A TRF meeting is just synonymous with a personal versus a business meeting. You could just call it a personal meeting. It's just that when you fill out our, like I've provided all of you a weekly tracking sheet so you can, you know, track your business activity each week. On that sheet, it says TRF meetings. Why? Because that's what we call it in my system. So don't make a big deal out of the term TRF. It stands for the relationship file, but we'll go into that on a different session. First TRF meeting is a personal TRF meeting. So I call all of them TRF meetings. Let's see, powerful. Where are the TRF discussions on the advisor? Okay. So somebody's saying, where are these vignettes on the Advisor Pack Monthly platform? They're not there. Let me go through it again. There's three projects that you need to master to be a successful financial advisor. You need to master lead generation. And that is this process of having ample numbers of people want to sit down and talk business with you. That's what I'm calling lead generation. In my case, I'm out there just rubbing elbows with a lot of people, minimum 10 people a week. You know, I have coffee every morning, 5 days a week. I have coffee in the morning, coffee in the afternoon, 2 or 3 o'clock with somebody. That's twice a day, 5 days a week, 10 minimum. My target's really 20 a week, but I just want you to see how natural this can move into a rhythm. Once in the morning, once in the afternoon, you're meeting with what I think is the bare minimum. If you're a professional, you're rubbing elbows with at least 10 clients, non-clients per week. That's momentum. That's adequate momentum. If you're meeting with less than 10 a week, then you're probably not meeting with enough people to make it a business process. But nevertheless, lead generation, you've got to master this. Just a side note, my goal for financial roadmaps using this process, the reciprocal moment process, just meeting with friends, not meeting for business or using sales tactics. My goal is 15 financial roadmaps per week, but sorry, 15 per month. I'm got screwed up on the metric. So 15 per month. So, and if I did less than 10 per month, I was very nervous about my numbers. So if I had less than 10 financial roadmaps per month, I'd get very nervous. I would work harder and ramp up my TRF meetings. But thankfully, my average was closer to 15 than it was to 10. So you can generate a ton of financial roadmaps by just meeting with people to catch up as friends, and by mastering the reciprocal moment four-step process. So lead generation, you have to master. Lead conversion, that's after somebody wants to sit down and talk business with you. It's your skill at what we talked about first today. It's your skill at being able to move someone who meets your ideal client to compel them to realize that they are a perfect fit for what you do. And it's the mastering lead conversion is mastering the skill of being able to change someone from a potential ideal client into an actual paying client. And then third is client service. You have to master client service, which in this program is defined as consistently exceeding your ideal client's expectations. Okay, consistently. So the Advisor Pack monthly program is all about client service. 100%. There's no client acquisition. There's no lead conversion. nothing. It is purely a client service curriculum. So those monthly projects that I send out to you in the Advisor Pack Monthly, they're all on client service. So we don't have a program for lead generation or lead conversion. Well, mainly for lead conversion, I just refer people over to Bill Bachrach, who has his own, he does extraordinarily powerful training to master the financial roadmap. So for lead conversion, I move everybody over to Bill. For lead generation, we don't have training for that. If anything, we do. I do one-on-one coaching. I tried to do for lead generation what I did for the client service, but I found that you cannot train a skill such as these reciprocal moments using videos. The best I can hope to do is explain it to you in this session like this. And then if you've got questions or if you listen to recordings and they're a little rough or they're not working for you, you just respond to me and ask me questions throughout the month. Like I've tried doing it, but here's what I'm seeing. And then you share with me whatever obstacle or roadblock you're encountering with this. So for me, I can't figure out any way other than one-on-one coaching. And the problem with one-on-one coaching is I only accept 10 at a time. So I'm always maxed out. I've always got 10 advisors that were doing one-on-one coaching. And then if somebody masters, you know, a skill and then they don't need the one-on-one coaching anymore, that spot fills up. I mean, there's almost always a waiting list. So it's just not realistic for me to offer you one-on-one coaching, mainly because it's always filled. But I mean, if you, I would say, try it on your own. The best I can tell you is follow the process that I describe, but then don't even think about not recording. I would go this far and say, if you don't record your reciprocal moments, I don't think you can make this work. The only way I've ever seen an advisor make this work is by improving over time by listening to their own recordings. So it's recordings and wind sprints and recordings and wind sprints. So twice a week, you're spending 20 minutes doing wind sprints, practicing these vignettes. And so that will work. Okay. Okay. Everybody says that makes sense. I went through last month. What we are working on is a certification for the Financial Advisor Mastery Program. And when I say the Financial Advisor Mastery Program, I'm talking about not lead conversion, not lead generation, but client service. So we're toying around with it. But last month, if you missed it, I did go through what we're playing around with. So this is a draft. How do you know when you've mastered client service? Well, you have a team of more than three people covering all five areas of personal finance. So you've got a team covering financial planning, money management, insurance, estate planning, and tax. Let's call it five subject matter experts in place where you are not any one of them. Okay, so it's a team delivering all this service. That you have adopted the 10 client deliverables. And if you don't know what that is, just be patient. We have modules in this Advisor Pack Monthly program on the 10 client deliverables. But the question on the table is, I give you the 10 client deliverables. Have you required of your five subject matter experts in each of those five areas to make a checklist underneath each one of the 10 client deliverables of everything that needs to happen over any 12-month period with your clients to make sure that nothing falls through the cracks? So the 10 client deliverables is just shorthand for you requiring your subject matter experts to come up with what we call deliverables checkpoints, which are all the checklist items that need to happen to deliver on the 10 client deliverables every 12 months. And so you get through the deliverables checkpoints for the year for a client, and then you just cycle back, then you immediately start over at the top of the list again. So you're continually cycling through your team's deliverables checkpoints that they created, which are all designed to ensure that the 10 client deliverables are happening. then CWLFS, that stands for, and we've gone through it a number of times, it's Comprehensive Written Lifetime Financial Strategy. So you've got experts in each of these five areas. Are you requiring each of them to create a comprehensive written lifetime strategy so that every ideal client has a comprehensive written lifetime tax strategy, comprehensive written lifetime money management strategy, insurance strategy, financial planning strategy as it relates to goals and so forth? So there are at least five documented strategies. We call them comprehensive written lifetime financial strategies. There's at least five of them for every ideal client, and that you're utilizing the three meeting process. And we've gone through this. If you have questions, just ask questions and we'll go through it again. But you have the three meeting process in place, which means that you're meeting with clients, ideal clients, every 4 months, and that you've got them all scheduled for the next 12 months. So every ideal client has all three meetings on the calendar at all times. So you're always booked a year out with every ideal client, and that you are requiring from every subject matter expert a minimum of three impressive, high-end, above average action items or recommendations from the subject matter expert to that client. And it's usually advice or recommendations from your team member on how they can improve their financial affairs, or they can accelerate their goals. And so if you do the math, if there are five areas of personal finance and you're requiring a minimum of three impressive action items for each of these five areas, that's 15 per meeting. So you're meeting three times a year. Every meeting, there's at least 15 above average action items, and you're meeting three times a year. So 15 times three, that's 45. So can you honestly say with your ideal clients, that however many you've got, let's say you have three ideal clients, can you honestly say that over the past 12 months, there have been a minimum of 45 impressive above average action items created by your team of subject matter experts? If not, you would not be certified in our system, because that's the goal. And then six is the ding, ding, ding. This is the payoff or the outcome. But we do provide a tool. We have a module on how to do this. We provide a spreadsheet, an Excel spreadsheet called the Monthly Referability Dashboard. And so the goal is to get your TARR, which is the annual referral rate. So this is nothing more than your client referral rate for the last 12 months. Are you getting more than three referrals per client on average from each ideal clients for the last two consecutive quarters? So think about this. Let's say you had 10 ideal clients and you're getting at least three referrals from all 10. That means you're getting 30 referrals per year from your clients. Would that be a game changer for you? So the outcome of financial advisor mastery is when you track referrals, which you need to be doing from clients, that you're getting more than three. And I will give you a hint on this one. For people that have been in our flagship program, where we watch this metric a little more carefully, for people that are working with us, it's not uncommon for advisors to have the TARR to be 10 or more. So imagine if you were getting 10, let's say after each meeting in the three meeting process, you were getting three or four referrals from each client after every client progress meeting. That is not uncommon. That is not uncommon if you master this certification. So again, we use a lot of weird language, so you can write down this link, mastery.link. And if you go to that URL, it's a spreadsheet listing all the weird terminology, or if you hear me say things like TARR, the annual referral rate, you can go to mastery.link and see what that means and define all these kind of terms that are unique vernacular to my programs. So you've got that. My best advice is I have provided each of you with a business activity spreadsheet which I recommend that you take the 5 minutes every week and just update this spreadsheet so that I can see what your activity is. And that will help me identify, I can tell where you're stuck watching your activity. So I encourage you to go fill out that spreadsheet. Just take a few minutes and update it every week. And if you have any questions about anything, about the vignettes, about a client, about the structure, again, I don't really have any training for client acquisition. That's why we share so much about it in this session. But if you do have a question for me, you're trying to implement what I'm talking about, if you click on Contact Us in any of our programs, you'll find a link that allows you to leave me a voicemail. So I prefer, rather than you typing out what you're struggling with, I prefer you to go to that link and just click the start recording button and just spend a minute or two and just explain to me what you're dealing with. That will give me a little more context and I'll understand what your issues are. And I promise that our team will get back with you. And that's it. So as always, I wish you all the best success. And until next month, I'm Mark Little.